Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
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 Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 the podcast where each week we review a different science fiction or fantasy audiobook in as spoiler-free a way that we can manage, then come back for a discussion that spoils the hell out of absolutely everything.
Usually the back of the book does a pretty good job of spoiling it, I found.
Exactly. This week we're reviewing Nine Fox Gambit by Yoon-Ha Lee, which is the last of the Hugo nominees that we'll all be reviewing. By the way, if you want to vote for the Hugos, make sure that you buy your Worldcon supporting membership by July 15th.
Good idea.
Yeah. Okay, so Nine Fox Gambit. From the back of the book. When Captain Kel Cheris of the Hexarchate is disgraced for her unconventional tactics, Kel Command gives her a chance to redeem herself by retaking the Fortress of Scattered Needles from the Heretics. Cheris's career isn't the only thing at stake. If the fortress fails, the Hexarchate itself might be next. Cheris's best hope is to ally with the undead tactician Shuos Jadao. The good news is that Jadao has never lost a battle, and he may be the only one who can figure out how to successfully besiege the fortress. The bad news is that Jadao went mad in his first life and massacred two armies, one of them his own. As the siege wears on, Cheris must decide how far she can trust Jadao, because she might be his next victim. So, Barry, what did you think?
It was a pretty solid war book with a lot of math.
Okay. And so you loved it, huh?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, it's a little hard to follow. I did notice that a number of other people online, when they reviewed the book, had to read it twice. That might have actually helped me understand more of it. At least I didn't need a nap. Okay.
They didn't taunt you with one anyway.
I just feel like it could have used maybe a vocabulary primer or something.
Okay.
Like an RPG.
Like a glossary section maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. It was an okay book. I was confused about half of it. I liked some of it, but I had to slog through about three quarters of the book before it got to that part. It was vaguely confusing. I liked the concept of the whole math, whatever effects they were, but I don't think I may have completely misunderstood how they worked, that they actually existed in the book or something, because
Kevin is now confused about possibly what he thought and perhaps whether the book actually existed.
I mean, maybe I misunderstood something about what they were talking about, but I didn't really completely buy into that it would work.
If you just mentally replace every place they have a math reference with the word magic,
well, right,
it starts to make way more sense.
It would work in a magical world, and it would work in a VR world or, you know, a simulated reality kind of thing. I don't know that I was convinced that it would work in our universe based on the information they gave us, but whatever.
So you're saying that in our universe, you can't line up armies in various formations and have exotic effects?
Well, they didn't really go into it, but they made it sound like the exotic effects were like these weird magical effects that would happen only because people like lined up in a line. And I was like, okay, maybe I misunderstood what exotic effects were supposed to be, but I'm not convinced. I'm convinced that maybe you could use, you know, some weird, you know, Star Trek.
Torment Kevin further?
Food drive.
So in the original Star Trek series, right, they basically had those aliens that formed a grid in front of the Starship Enterprise, right? Is that like a formation? In
the Tholians, you mean?
Yeah, the Tholians.
Yes, Tholian web. And I think they were just, you know, that was just technology, and they were making a web so they couldn't get through the web.
So saying it was past science fiction into fantasy?
If they said...
like science fantasy?
I don't know. It wasn't science fantasy because...
Is it fantastic
wasn't.
Science?
It definitely wasn't.
Maybe just weird science.
Or it was like science fantasy that you wanted to shoot yourself in the head because it was just not fantastical.
She blinded me with science.
Okay.
Well, that went somewhere.
Did it? Well, actually, I thought this one was pretty good.
How dare you?
I'm not sure how many sequels I'm going to be on board for, but I actually really like the universe. And so... Yeah, this is going to be... Barry just mimed zero.
It was actually a very large zero formation.
Okay, yes.
Because we are the Triarchate.
Oh, you've just formed Fledge Zero? Anyway.
Yes.
But anyway, this is a world where mathematics and ritual have, as Kevin was mentioning, exotic effects. And people's beliefs have direct influence over the physical world. In some ways, it's, like you said, a scientifically described form of magic. So soldiers can stand in a particular formation and, like, you know, they'll have a special shield or something will come zapping out of them just because they're standing in a particular formation and have certain beliefs and have followed a certain calendar.
Right.
That was another thing I didn't really understand so much, the whole calendrical effect.
We can go more into that in the discussion section. But one of the things that I liked about it was that there was some humor in the book. The plot lines and the list of factions do get a bit complex, and I'm not entirely sure I understood the reasons that everything happened. But in the end, I thought it was a fresh and interesting take on the SF military thriller. So I think that's about as far as we can go without some serious spoilage. So it's time for us to get into the formation that will invoke the exotic effect called the discussion section.
Calendrical rot.
Calendrical rot's happening.
Well, we will fight it with the ritual intonation of the word sci-fi.
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 And welcome back to our discussion section, where we're going to spoil this book like a carry-on bomb. Now comes the point in the podcast where I ask these two for their standout scenes in the book, and they stare at me as though they've never seen me before. So, guys, what's your favorite or otherwise standout scene in the book?
Well, Stephen, of course, I always have it ready right when you ask.
You followed for my little track.
Yeah,
that's why he always asks you first.
I know. Actually, I think my favorite scene was when Jadao basically is trying to teach Cheris, you know, about they're attacking the fortress, and it's like, okay, how can we best do this? And she kind of does the first wave, and then he says, okay, well, in order to figure out what you should do, you should design a game involving the fortress and how to attack the fortress, you know, some like simulation or something. And of course she's like, this is stupid. But then after she does it for a while, she sort of like, you know, goes, oh wait, I've been totally focusing on the wrong things. You know, I've been ignoring the fact that these other people were even involved, and that was the real issue, not these like minor tactical things that I was kind of spending all this time on, getting like, you know, the plus and minus modifiers right in these tables or something. And I was like, well, that's cool, because sort of like, you know, hey, we're developing an RPG to figure out, you know, a simulation on how to do this. And I just thought that was a neat little, not necessarily a call to games, but just like a way to deal with a problem maybe.
Okay, cool. Barry?
I would have to say that my favorite scene was, I think it was like a flashback to when she was back in school, near the end of the book.
Actually, I think it was when Jadao was back in school.
Oh, yes, that might also be the case, since you really can't separate the two during the book.
Yeah, it becomes this sort of anime high school college romance type of story.
I guess he had sort of like shuffled the cards and like hidden some away to, you know, sort of impress, you know, his girlfriend, and he had lined up like a strait of flowers or something. I just thought that was sort of like a standout scene. I don't know why, but
yeah, it was a good vivid scene.
Yeah. It had a lot of texture for me. And then I guess my second favorite scene was they kind of had a dig at Kevin because they talked about 10 weeks in terms of travel time, which I know he hates. So I derived an amount of pleasure in that.
Just imagining me being irritated by it.
Yes. Maybe like swerving on the road or something. And
2 10-week weeks. Like, ah.
So, yeah, my favorite scene was actually really minor, but it was something that I thought was kind of cool, which was a lot of military science fiction kind of just wants to grim itself to death. And with two characters, one of whom is a mathematician and then the other is this omnicidal strategist, there was a lot of chance for this just to be grim and dark all the way through. And instead, Cheris has this tremendous love for romantic comedies, but a very specific kind of romantic comedy, because everybody fights duels in this culture.
Right.
And so they make this into a wacky comedy by having the heroine fight duels with calendrical swords, which are the magic ritual swords that they use, that she throws together from anything that's handy, like office supplies and so forth.
Right.
So every week the heroine puts together another sword made out of metal tape and paper clips.
Right. It's like, here's some melons and, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, actually that was kind of funny where shoot, you know, because they would kind of come back there every once in a while, and Jadao was sort of like, you know, first baffled by what the hell she was doing, and then I think kind of like liked it after a while.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind watching this romantic comedy of hers where the heroine just sort of says, you're after my boyfriend, so I'm going to take you down with this sword I'm making out of whiteout and rubber bands.
It's like 90210 meets like Dark Angel or something.
Pretty much, yeah. Meets Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Or Jason Bourne, I want to kill you with a pencil.
Yeah, exactly. But a funny Jason Bourne.
That's John Wick. He's the man who kills people with pencils.
That's also the Joker, but...
Also true. The pencil has become a popular weapon lately.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I guess we're back to our usual questions. Was there tea?
Yes, more than once.
Yes.
And also sweet bean cake.
Exactly. We don't actually have a question about sweet bean cake, but maybe we should start.
Well, it's the obvious replacement for the crumpet, right?
Obvious. Yeah. Obvious.
Yeah, clearly. I think at one time they were just talking about drinking tea, and another time they said, you know, oh, the local spice tea was quite sweet, you know, to conceal the poison taste. You know? Right.
This was at Chuos, the Assassin's Academy. So
right. So
it might have been actually true.
I got the impression that that was supposed to be just sort of a joke that he made, but you're not quite sure.
Well, the schooling itself is also sort of interesting, right? They sort of have this game contest where everybody designs their own games. And I guess Jadao's game was submitted anonymously. Mm-hmm. And his game was to get people to sort of fall into the trap of believing in certain heresies that...
Well, to accidentally perform a heresy without realizing it or kind of being tricked into it.
Right. To perform pranks on other people. And hidden inside that is this heresy.
Right. Yeah. And so, and he was trying to show how brittle the system was by kind of saying, look, these people just did them, you know, minor ones, but, you know, so not a big deal. And then it turns out, what, his friend commits suicide because he does this major thing to some other dignitary or something. I forget who it was.
Yeah, he ends up blowing his own brains out, I guess.
And, yep.
And then, of course, I'm like, because he was like first year cadet or something like that. And then like some like third year jumps in and takes credit. And then they go in and say, oh, well, you know, that shows, you know, nerve to take credit out right after a suicide, blah, blah, blah. You know, we should recommend this person for additional pampering or whatever was going on. Like, you know,
I'm going to recommend you for additional pampering.
Well, it's just sort of like you're going to get some attention from the higher ups and like kind of groom you for something that sounded like that was going to happen. And so I guess you can see how he's like, well, this first year, you know, was obviously able to perform beyond even what a normal cadet would do, but was willing not to take credit and just kind of...
Okay. All right.
Spoiled the hell out of that, didn't we?
Well, this is the spoiler section.
Yeah. Woohoo! We got our timing right for once.
So, next usual question. Which character or faction are you closest to, and which one would you like to be in?
I don't know. I mean, I think I'd like to be Jadao.
Getting the black cradleberry.
Yeah.
So, is it the killing everybody part?
Well, you know, it's sort of like the whole attempt to, you know, ruin everything for everybody, I guess.
Yeah, no, I see you that way, but...
I just like to point out, none of my pranks have forced anybody to commit suicide, at least that I'm aware of.
So what you're saying is you're still working on it.
Achievement not unlocked? I don't know.
And was that all you had to say on the subject?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Kevin?
I don't think I understood the book well enough to really... make a good good selection. I don't know. I like games, so maybe I would be in that one if I had to be, but...
You could be a servitor, just like talking about people behind their back.
I was going to joke about that. It's like the servitors, as far as I could tell, were sort of like they're robots that sort of performed menial labor that eventually became sentient over the years through upgrades. And
just like when we all used to work together.
Yep. And then like, you know, that was sort of a subplot where the servitors were sort of getting away with anything because people just ignored them.
Just like when we used to work together.
Yep.
Well, they also planned that carefully, right? When they would find two people that were having sex, they would go off and do, you know, a bunch of stuff like in the next room because they weren't being monitored at the time.
Just like when... No, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess for me, it would depend on which facet of my personality I'm inflicting on people. I think that for some people, I'd be the Vedona, the sort of ritual disciplinarians, because I would develop this whole ritual based around tea that would enable people to shoot lasers out of their brains.
That sounds awesome.
So going back to the servitors,
mm-hmm.
I kind of wish they had explored that a little bit more. Because at one point, you know, when they were talking about, you know, their upgrades and like sort of figuring out people's patterns and stuff like that, I thought that was going to maybe get fleshed out and be a bigger arc of the book, but...
This is going to be a whole series. I suspect that that might be something that is explored in the future.
Does anybody write standalone books anymore?
No, honestly not.
Very, very few.
Because you don't make money off of the first book so much.
Yeah, well, the servitors, I was a little unclear whether they were actually helping the heretics out or whether it was just sort of an accident that...
I think they're helping themselves out, to be honest.
Well, because it sounded like they were saying, oh, we have these servitor plants that are passing us information to the heretics or messing up the system somehow. But I was unclear whether that was actually happening or I misunderstood something.
But in the end, near the end of the book, right, they ended up joining forces and, you know, having their own formation and
yeah, they said,
like,
oh, Charis 23. Charis means 23, apparently. So 23 is stalking us.
If you reverse the numbers and multiply by 2, it's 64, right?
Exactly. So it turns out that they're like, we sort of had internal bets, and then we actually have a human that was being nice to us. So that was weird. And so we thought we would, you know, help them out when she asked nicely. Yeah, it turned out that because of the, you know, the calendrical system that the heretics were doing in their evil democracy they were trying out or whatever, they basically accidentally let servitors take the place of soldiers. Because normally somehow the math...
I don't think it was accidentally. They asked them to, right?
Well, I'm unclear about whether their calendrical system let that happen on purpose or whether it was just like a side effect of the fact that they were a different calendrical system. And yeah, I mean, the whole calendrical thing, I mean, it makes much more sense as magic where it's like, oh, by just counting days differently, it makes, you know, holograms and weird force patterns appear by having people stand in rows in a certain way. I mean, I'm willing to totally hand wave that away in a fantasy book, but in science fiction, I'm sort of like, so just by having a 57-day month instead of a 59-day month, this works or something? I'm like, I don't believe this yet.
So you're not willing to just believe that this takes place in a universe where that happens?
I'm willing to believe it could, but I don't think they gave enough information to fulfill my science fiction, you know, framework that,
they have broken the science fiction framework contract.
Right. They didn't fulfill the science fiction contract enough. They might have fulfilled science fantasy, but it wasn't written like science fantasy. So
science fantasy?
Science fantasy.
Fantasy that takes place in your nose.
And then the ephedrine came and it was awesome.
I mean, it just seemed like it didn't get explained to my satisfaction, I guess.
Well, it was sort of odd because I started out with believing that this was all in a virtual reality. And so for me, it was actually fine. And
In a virtual reality, I'd be willing to believe this totally worked just because of, you know, how the VR worked and or how, you know, some computer simulation would work. So at the beginning, I'm like, oh, they're playing in StarCraft or something.
Well, and I just assumed that it was virtual people in a virtual world, not that it was people inside the Matrix.
Right. And so that's kind of, I was feeling that at the beginning too. And then and they even mentioned something about, well, the human operator doing this. And so I'm like, oh, they actually know about the humans running the game. And then later on I realized, no, they were just talking about the human operator, which they were one of that class or something. So I'm like, okay, I guess it's not VR.
So because you misunderstood something and then decided that you'd no longer misunderstood it, you decided it wasn't VR?
I don't know if that was the only thing, but I thought that was like a hint that they knew that they were in a simulation.
Okay.
That, oh, when the human operator does something, this other thing happens. And so I thought they meant, you know, when the person's playing the game or whatever, they're able to do stuff. And so I'm thinking, you know, the human operator is doing these like large tactical things and they're just simulations, but they're really actually sentient or something. And that would have meant that all the weird calendrical stuff, you know, I'm like, okay, that would make sense in that system, but not in a actual universe.
Right. I first started out believing that, yeah, this was some kind of virtual reality. And then when they never actually mentioned it, I decided it sort of didn't matter, that it could have been a virtual reality or just another universe where these things are true. But since they mentioned them at the beginning of the book, I decided that it fulfilled the contracts as necessary.
Look, I have prepared the Matrix of War. I'm ready to go into battle.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, so then the other big thing, of course, is, you know, Jadao's like long game, right? Where, and I'm a little unclear as to why he decided to bring the whole system down, other than like his friend killed himself. And so did he, was that like the reason why, or was it before that he
did? Well, I don't think he really particularly believed in the system even before that.
Well, that's why I'm unclear as to what the genesis was, if it was something else.
One of the reasons that they don't actually go that much into why he specifically wanted to do that is because the system is objectively bad. Like they say, even at the beginning, that part of maintaining this ritual requires ritual sacrifice of heretics and, you know, all of this bad stuff that you just have to do all the time. My take on it was the system is just a bad system and it should be taken down, and they keep it going because it gives people power to be able to maintain these rituals.
Right. Well, kind of so the people become kind of dependent upon these, you know, effects that would happen. And then I'm still not clear what the effects were other than, like, you know, force punch and all the things that happened during, you know, it was very anime-like, which, you know, in anime it makes sense, but I don't know.
It's like if we actually discovered that we were torturing angels to death to make electricity.
Okay.
I mean, we are, but we're not supposed to tell anybody that. So, as you mentioned, at one point, somebody gets assigned to create a game to understand a situation. If you had to create a game about this world, what would it be?
StarCraft.
Bonus points for awesome names of things.
Right. That this definitely had, you know, it felt like an anime world in a way with a lot of, you know, big flowery names for, you know, the attacks and the factions, yeah, and everything. And, you know, that's why I kind of felt very StarCraft like too, because it's like, you know, the Nine Needles Fortress or whatever it was called, you know, they had, you know, all sorts of crazy names for things, which, you know, sound like they would fit in a fantasy world, but, you know, whatever.
The month of the candied yam.
Yes.
Yes. So yeah, Barry tried to confuse us by adding more names to our notes.
How many did I add?
Day of the Engorged Marsupial.
Actually, I did not add that one. It was in the book already.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Now, as far as I know, he only added jellied monkey Doritos, okay, to the list.
I thought that he made all of them up, but
yes.
Now I'm more terrified.
There is a strong Asian influence in this book, obviously, because the author is Asian.
Mm-hmm. I believe he's Korean-American.
Yes, I believe that is correct. So, yeah, I mean, this kind of reminded me a bit of, like, Warhammer 40K books. I don't know if you guys have ever read any.
No.
There's a lot of these big space battles and, you know, interesting named weapons and things, mm-hmm, like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely, like I was saying, it definitely felt like, you know, hey, it's StarCraft or whatever. And there's a couple of times I even used some words that were maybe things from StarCraft. I don't know if that probably wasn't intentional, but so, I mean, those parts of, you know, envisioning this as that kind of game, you know, then it's more, it fits better, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's also a strong element of honor in the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially like allegiance to the system and to your superiors, yeah, and that type
forced
of thing.
Forced allegiance, what did they call it? The formation.
Yeah. The formation
instinct or something.
Yeah. So basically we had the military caste, which were the Kells, and formation instinct basically made you instinctively obey your commander. And then they had this one,
which isn't really that different from our military, right? I mean, it's a very top down,
right,
command system, and you sort of just have to do what your commander tells you, unless it's, you know, blatantly illegal.
But that it seemed like it was more drilled into you psychologically, which also happens. But this sounds like it's a much deeper, you know, programming.
Right. One thing that they never really explained, and that made me think that actually maybe this was a virtual reality, was their ability to do very complete and instant conversions of people from one thing to another, that they could basically instantly brainwash people.
Well, there were things like, weren't there their suits, like they would just hit a button and suddenly their clothes would change into something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that stuff sounded like, okay, that's like a game VR thing, but I don't know what happened with that later.
I mean, the other thing I thought, you know, why I thought this might have been a VR system was that at one point there was a battle and it's like, oh, well, we got hit by the dismemberment cannon or something, where everybody's like arms and legs just like fell off.
Right.
You know, and the suit said, oh, we're deploying anticoagulants so you won't bleed to death. You're like, but I'm just a, you know, stump in a suit now.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, my arms shut off, but I can go over to this box, which has a red cross on the side, and just get enough of those and I'm fine again.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, and so that was the other thing, is I couldn't quite figure out, you know, there's a part in the book where it's the very beginning where the commander or the captain, whatever, she's, you know, leads this thing and she has them do non-standard formations in order to win the battle, which she does, but then she loses some people who won't follow them, and then, I don't remember, for some reason they decide not to take the objective that they were going for, and then she's sort of disgraced, and I think that was why, wasn't it?
They needed her to take this much bigger thing.
Well, so they said, well, we'll give you a chance to come up with a plan for this other big thing instead of, you know, putting you in the disgrace box or something.
Right. But that was all part of kind of an elaborate trap to get her to
make her have to do that.
Yes.
Okay. So then, you know,
at least that was my impression.
Yeah, that's plausible. So they come up with, you know, they have a few people say, well, you know, use this weapon, use that weapon. It's like you get to select one weapon for your, you know, loadout or something for your, for the level. and
right. They pull out the calendrical swords and they're all sparking and glitching.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I still think that it could very well.
Well, the first part definitely seemed like it. And then maybe I just, I don't know, acclimated to it. I don't know.
Yes.
But yeah, the part that didn't make sense, if it wasn't some kind of computer simulation, was then she's like, okay, I want to use Jadao, you know, this historical commander who several hundred years ago had slaughtered everybody, including his own army, and then killed himself, right?
Right.
And then they're like, well, let's put him in, you know, suspended animation somehow, and we'll revive him to be the general whenever we need some crazy thing to happen that's going to be impossible otherwise. And yeah, that sounds very much like a computer thing, like, oh, you know, his stats were just like, you know, plus 20 or whatever, and so on everything.
You're saying like Jadao's like the, you know, the Death Blossom, he's the weapon of last resort.
and so they're like,
If they had used the phrase death is a primitive concept, I prefer to think of Jadao as fighting evil in another dimension, extra points.
Yeah, then I would have been like, okay, that makes up for everything in the entire book. and so, you know, the captain says, okay, I want to revive Jadao for this. And so they're like, oh, good idea. And like, and then she kind of is pissed later because she knows she was sort of tricked into suggesting it.
Right.
So what they have to do because he's dead is she becomes the host. And so it's this weird thing where he's sort of in her head. No one else can hear him, but yet other people can somehow see his shadow.
Yeah, that was another thing that confused me, was that integration between Jadao and Charis.
And I was like, okay, that sounds like another game-like thing or VR, you know, simulation thing 16, or something.
You can see the shadow inside. And
right, or magic, you know, sure, then, you know, that's fine, you know. But I'm like, how would it work in, like, our universe or whatever? You know, again, maybe it's not our universe, but
you just don't have the math for it, Kevin.
Yeah.
I can see the shadow behind Steven's eyes.
It's mathematical, yes.
It's algebraic.
And so, yeah, that part was kind of weird. And then they had all the weird stuff about how she was protected from most weapons because the first attack would, like, kill him instead of her. And mm-hmm. he'd act like a shield for her. And I was like, how does that work if he's just, you know... If he's just like this, like, thing in her head, you know, maybe it's actually, you know, suit of armor that he's, like, you know, attached to or something.
I want to write science fiction in big letters on the front of The Hobbit and see what happens to you. Well, there aren't people that small. That doesn't make any sense.
It's actually just like a magical pair of pants. It's like Jadao pants.
It's like, no, Bjorn, you can't do that.
Well, I think actually in some ways my enjoyment of the book was a bit enhanced because I had chosen this weekend to just get into playing chess again, which I never really had been very good at. And I was on a long plane flight, and I just decided I was going to pull out this book of chess openings. And so, you know, this idea of sort of ritualized combat and things have to happen in a certain way. And so, yeah, my version of making a game about this book would be, you have a variant of chess where you line up four pawns and just the right angle, and that causes a laser beam to fire off and destroy whichever piece is on the other side, unless they are also arranged in a particular fashion.
It's like Sargon on acid.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, yeah, what was that old 8-bit game that was kind of like that, where it was a chess game, but it's
Sargon?
Well, Sargon was just a chess game.
Oh, Archon.
Archon, yes. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Or battle chess.
The things that we know that no one else needs to know.
See, Harry Potter, they just stole battle chess from that game.
Yeah. Nobody else had ever come up with the idea of chess that was more than chess.
And so did Star Wars, right, when they had that little circular board with the moving monsters.
I still want a hologram board like that. These days you can basically make one, but it's not quite the same.
Let the Wookiee win.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that calendrical rot has set in, which means it's time for us to close things down. If you like this podcast, we'd appreciate it if you'd subscribe to us on iTunes. Even if you don't listen to podcasts via iTunes, turns out they count those up, and it helps us to get more listeners. We'd also appreciate positive reviews. If you want to leave negative reviews, I can't actually physically stop you.
I will use the powers of my... something. I don't know. I was going to say mine, but that's not cool enough. I will apply the, you know, erasure gun and
love to hate you.
Yes. I only did that so you could drop that line.
The power of the editor.
All right. So until next time, we have been Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.